This is Juma, and this is Leaf Style, where education, culture, and cannabis collide. Also want to welcome my co-host this season, Dr. Safia Lin, a medical cannabis and emergency medical physician, and the founder of Ask Dr. Lin. What's going on, Doc?
Oh, everything is well. Good morning, Juma. Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure to always be here. Juma, our resident attorney, our sociologist, our global citizen. You always do great things for the culture and the world, and we're proud to be working together today. We want to introduce our beautiful new guest, Lunita. Not only is she a guest of the show, but she's a personal friend. So happy to have you, Lunita, our career creative, healing, healer, and connoisseur. So much to get into. Lunita PG, welcome to the Leaf Style Show.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. It's an honor.
Welcome, Lunita. Very happy to have you here today. So let's get right into it. How did your relationship with cannabis begin?
Oh, wow. Over a decade ago, first time that I was exposed to it, I was in high school. Which is crazy because I was definitely one of those kids that grew up thinking, you know, what is the saying where people used to say, like, they don't do drugs or alcohol, there's like a term for it, and it's not sober, it's like a kid term. It'll come back to me. I promise it'll come back to me. But I was someone that was very much like there. Okay. Student Government Association, took 5 classes instead of 4, an athlete. And then I got invited to a party, and, you know, growing up in North Carolina and right outside Fort Bragg, there's not much for kids to do except hang out in the Sonic parking lot or go in the woods, and kids could start a good bonfire. And that's what it was. We know how to start a good bonfire. Country kids could start a good bonfire. And, the next thing you know, I was in the middle of like driving deep in the woods at a bonfire. And what shocked me is, I don't know why I thought I was going to see, like, not judging, but, you know, like the kids that skip school, you know, that aren't in class, like some of your friends. Mm-hmm. I saw other Student Government Association kids. I saw the football team. I saw cheerleaders. And I was like, wait a minute. So we all, like, this is just a front? Like, we play like we're goody two-shoe, and this is what you guys really do? And I was past the joint. Just assumed that it was marijuana. Come to find out it was spice, the legal marijuana that was selling in gas stations at the time.
Oh, wow.
And that, because I had no dabble in cannabis or anything like that, I would not know that if you consume spice, you're not supposed to inhale the same way you would an actual blunt, because it's not real. It's apparently supposed to be like a 1-2 thing. I don't even think the stuff is safe. And it did not end well. Let's just say hallucinations was bad, and it happened with everyone. And we thought that the bonfire got, you know, raided, and it didn't. And everyone just started breaking out in the woods running. So then I was kind of hesitant from, trying anything cannabis-related. I couldn't even, like, I fell, okay? Like, it rained that day, and I fell. I scraped my back up. How was I supposed to lie and go home and ask for bandages to fix my back and stuff like that? Like, what was I doing? I want to say a few months later, the opportunity presented myself again, and I was like, no, we're going to have to open this up before anything sparks. I need to visually see the stuff I see on TV, because, again, I don't know anything about cannabis. It just has to remotely look like what I see. And I loved it. I was giggly. I felt also very badass and like, how am I supposed to hide this? So I knew that it was not something I always wanted to do, but I looked at it as a, like, a reward. Like, if I did good at my golf tournament, I might see a friend after, you know, the tournament and then tell my mom I'm really tired and, you know, my tournament was long, it was great, and I just want to go to sleep. Little things like that. That's when I was first introduced to it. But I still didn't know anything about it. It was always like someone else taking care of it and me just like smoking. I didn't know how to roll, pack, consume, buy. I dated someone who was older and they smoked. And when I moved here to Florida with them, we lived in the Orlando area. Yes, I actually lived in Florida before moving back to Florida. And it became a very much so, like, she smoked all the time, so I just smoked with her. And when I ended up going back to North Carolina, I was kind of on my own. I went straight into the work field after high school. I didn't do college, but all my friends did. So it was like me going back home, and none of my friends that I would smoke with, that would take care of the stuff, is there. And I'm like, how am I supposed to buy it? Especially after I built up a tolerance to where I'm like, no, now I can't sleep. I feel like, you know, I don't really have an appetite for it. What am I supposed to do? So being in a military town, trying to find where to buy weed from, who to buy weed from, was very paranoia on 1,000. Okay. On 8,000. It's not like I'm just in an average town. And you're like, okay, if I spark up in my car, just don't have it be at the police station. My dad is a cop. Everyone around me is law enforcement.
Where is this in North Carolina? Where in North Carolina?
Fayetteville, North Carolina, right outside Fort Bragg, the United States' largest military base. So yeah, Hope Mills, Fayetteville, North Carolina. I went to high school in the Hope Mills area, and then grew up in the Fayetteville area. Yes. And people that don't know Fayetteville, if I say J. Cole, all of a sudden they know Fayetteville, and they're like, Dreamville! Oh, I get it. I understand.
You put Fayetteville on the map, huh?
910, baby. 2-6.
Right.
So I found a friend of mine that was older who was just as curious to finding out about cannabis. And she was always like, oh, they're always around people. So we had to do our own thing. Like, we're both military kids, paranoid as hell. Do the whole sketchy thing where you're texting a number, you don't even know the person's name, they don't come out to your car, you got to go into their house. I'm already thinking, like, if I'm not at church at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's gonna be issues for my family. That's they think I'm spending the night with you, and if I'm not at church at 8 o'clock in the morning, an APB is gonna be put out for me. Okay.
Facts.
We got the weed, and then we didn't know what to do with it. How do you consume it? How do you roll it up? We're watching YouTube tutorials. Can't figure it out. It's not sticking. The paper, do they use glue? How do they get it to stick? Don't know what to do. So finally we just say, you know what, screw it. Let's get an apple. And we carve a hole in an apple. And I literally felt like I was that's literally how I remember purchasing cannabis for the first time and smoking was Hawaiian hot boxing, you know, where you lock yourself in a bathroom, you wet a towel, and you put it at the crease of the door. You turn all the water on as high as possible to make it like a little sauna. Because you swear to God, no one can smell the cannabis. But then I was too paranoid. That wasn't enough for me. I had to get a toilet paper roll and stuff it with dryer sheets. So when I exhale, it smelled like laundry. And that's how I am.
And the upper balls.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
the commitment to smoking is real. I hear it in your voice. The commitment is so real.
I was so dedicated and determined, especially because, like, growing up in the Fayetteville area and outside of Fort Bragg, I'm surrounded by veterans. And the opioid usage there and the alcohol usage there is something that scares me. Like, right. In that kind of town, not many people are, like, unless you're a military kid or grew up in that town, you don't know what it's like. Even if you have no military personnel in your family, just being around that environment and seeing people in uniform every day, having your house shake at night when there's practice bombing going on base and it's normal, but when you have visitors, they're like, what is happening? Hearing gun rifles in the middle of the night, but it's normal because the Brits are in town and they're doing practice training and cross training. Like, It's very different. I had my high school graduation, you know how people have like the projectors so families can see and stuff. And it wasn't just so families can see people walking across. It's because a chunk of my student body that I graduated with was already enlisted and deployed somewhere. I come from a town where it's not just like ROTCs in school. We have recruiters in school every day because once you're 18, you could just finish school online if you wanted to, as long as you're enlisted. And the way that they get you is they, you know, you get paid on the 1st and the 15th. You get insurance. You get medical benefits. They pay for your school, housing, your food. And it's just like, why wouldn't I sign my life up? And what's unfortunate is growing up in a military town, while it is Veterans Day, and I am very thankful for people's services, it's very, I can't tell you how many military funerals I've been to. I can't tell you how many times I've heard a sound off rifle. Losing my friends. And that mentality is, if you don't do the military, you do the medical field. And if you don't do the medical field, you do the educational system. It's literally those three options. And if you don't do any of that, you're stuck in retail and food, or you end up getting on opioids and alcohol, or you marry someone enlisted. It's those options.
Did you ever consider the military?
I was pressured a lot, and not just military, because I come from a government oriented family. So I had Marines, I had Navy, I had military police, I had sheriff, I had 82nd Airborne. One uncle's a pilot, Air Force. So, you know, I had all of those kind of like pushed down my throat, and I feel like it was always in the place of not to make the family proud, but in the sake of, look at what everything the government could provide for you if you do this for them. And as a way of being taken care of, but also realizing that, like, sure, I could just become, you know, a chef in the military. I had friends that were chefs in the military who come from military-oriented backgrounds where both parents are enlisted, and then their older siblings are enlisted, and they don't want to go to war. They'd rather be, you know, some pets behind the desk and stuff like that. And 2013, 2014, the president made cuts to the military, and chefs went. I had friends that were like, whoa, I just got pregnant. My parents don't know yet. I was going to take all care of all this at WOMAC, you know, on base. What do I do now? It was something where, so military, I don't know so much that. There was a point in time where I thought I wanted to be a cop. Like, specifically, I wanted to be, like, Marissa Hargitay of Law & Order SVU. And my mom is someone who was always very for my dreams. Not to say my dad wasn't. My dad is very realistic. My mom's a Libra and my dad is a Scorpio. So he's very, he'll bring me to reality. And my mom's very like, you can do whatever you want. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be like her. She helps people. She saves kids. And my dad is like, you are so emotional. There is no way in hell you could ever work Special Victims Unit because you would end up attached to every case and it would be a conflict of interest. And I was like, right. My mom would be like, well, don't make her feel bad for having a heart. And I'm like, but he's right. How would I? And I'm a sensitive person, so I took it harshly. And he walked away, and my mom let me know. And, like, she would always kind of make light of his harsher sides and let me know that, like, look, as long as he's been on the force, he had this one case where he couldn't save a boy. And it's that one case that sticks with him for the rest of his life. And he knows that you are such a sensitive person. He wouldn't want that for you. And I was like, okay, so let me just move on to psychology. And then, yeah, no. Psychology, you know, as much as I love getting to know the mind and why people do the things that they do and make the decisions that they do, I'd be in school forever. And I just felt like at the time I couldn't figure out how – I didn't have the willpower or believe in myself enough to try and figure out how could I make that possible for me to go to school. So
you don't do military. Mm-hmm. You don't do the police officer. You pass on school and psychology. Mm-hmm. When did you say to yourself, I'm going to get into marketing?
So marketing, I feel like that's something that has always just naturally come with me. I didn't go to school for it or anything, which is crazy because when I speak to people that have actual degrees in marketing, they're like, were you taught? And I'm like, no. I got my worker's permit at 15 and I worked at a restaurant. And I know customer service. You just have to know people. And but know people in a way that isn't like my bosses used to say, like, we need to sell water to like a drowning man. And I'm like, but I'm not like lying selling water. I'm authentically selling water. You just have to know people. And I honestly have to thank my great grandparents. Sign language is my first language. Both my great grandparents were deaf and they raised me during my primary years. So sign language is body language. I read body language before speaking, and I feel like I take all of that in when I communicate and engage with people. I'm taking in their body language. I'm taking in their tone. I'm taking in, like, does a customer want me down their back? Does a customer want to be catered to and waited on hand and foot? Does a customer just kind of want to know someone's over here? Very much like that. You have to find what likes them and what suits them. Granted, not to say go against your boss and not sell, you know, the stuff that your boss is trying to get rid of that week to make commission. And I think that's why people like me, because I'm personable, but I'm not going to steer people wrong. I have a fear of being steering people wrong. I would never want to do that to them because I just believe in karma so much. Why? I don't want to be steered wrong. So why, you know? Yeah, it's marketing. I just feel like this naturally, it just came. You have to know what people want.
And when did you decide, sort of, so you're starting, you're planning around and working in this marketing space. Mm-hmm. Is that coincide with sort of the social media presence? And when did the cannabis and marketing combine? When did you combine those two?
So I never, like, I will say that, like, it naturally and organically started. And it wasn't so much from, like, a, this is what I'm marketing from a business side, but more so a personal side. Like, this is just authentically me. So if I were to, you know, do a post and it's just like my morning routine and it's a flat lay of me doing yoga, and while my legs are stretched out, you see I have like a chakra book laid out. You see that I have my cannabis tray laid out, and people, it's just naturally there. So then it would entice people to be like, you smoke? Or what do you smoke? Or what are your practices? Mm. Or what's your morning routine? Or like, do you feel better when you do this? Are you able to function if you smoke that early? Is that weed? Is that pot? Is that pot in the street? And then, you know, that's when I start, I guess, being more like, as we were talking, you know, earlier, Dr. Juma, where I become very transparent and vulnerable and authentic with people. And I go, yeah, like, this is how I consume. I'm not going to lie, when I first started sharing cannabis on social media, I always did it in a way, especially because where I lived in, you know, the military town then, it was always in a way that was slightly inconspicuous. Like, my homies would know what's going on, but like, if someone were to be petty and screenshot and send it to my parents or a grandparent or something, that I could mix and say it was something else. I grew up
right
knowing about natural herbs and holistic healing. I learned that from my great grandparents and my grandparents. So I've already incorporated mugwort, ladder, you know, rose petals, not the ones from Walmart. I always tell people when they want to do that cute little rose blunt thing, I'm like, please just get a real rose, not something that has pesticide sprayed on it. Because God, please don't smoke pesticides. That's the last thing we need for you to happen. So you could be cute and think you're a little Tumblr girl. Please don't do that. I would say that, you know, dried out CBD flower can look really equivalent to a dried out dandelion. A dandelion bud looks just like a dried out nug. And say, like, it's mugwort and dandelion.
Give us a time frame. So what age were you then, and what year was that?
When I was posting cannabis, like inconspicuously?
When you first started. Mm-hmm.
I'd say 19. 19. Okay. 18, 19. So yeah, a decade. Like 17, 18.
So
on Twitter, because yes, not many, you know, older people and your parents had Twitter. And my friends had Twitter. So like 17, right, 18, right, 19, I could be on Twitter late at night and be like, I'm zooted. And then put the sunglass emoji and my friends would know what that was. And that's about it. There'd be no pictures. But actually posting pictures and being open about that was definitely 18, 19 years old. So 2000.
And then when did you start to cultivate Lunita? So when did you start to cultivate Lunita as an actual brand?
So Lunita is a childhood nickname. Means little moon. It means little moon in Italian and in Spanish. And I honestly, we're going to get personal here. I had a nickname growing up, and it was never a nickname given to me. It was more so like a nickname like kids would call me to pick on me. And I had some weight issues, and kids would call me Fatty McFatback. And my freshman year going into high school, I worked my ass off on the volleyball team and dropped crazy amount of weight during the summer. So when I started school, people could no longer call me Fatty McFatback, except the few bullies that still wanted to call me that throughout high school. It was to the point where I turned Fatty McFatback after I lost the weight into like a, I'm going to wear it like it's a proud title until I got tired of wearing it like a proud title. Because back then we had MySpace. We weren't on Facebook then was for like college people. MySpace is what we functioned with. And I would go out to the mall, Walmart, and people would be like, oh my God, is that Fatty McFatback? And I'm like, ooh, they know me as Fatty McFatback before Lunita. People from other high schools before Lunita. And I think that I'd just rather be called Lunita and instead of Fatty McFatback. And so I posted Lunita, like I changed like my handle to Lunita, like just my name. When people refer to me as Fatty McFatback, I correct them as if I'm correcting someone, you know, saying my pronoun incorrectly, because I look at it very much so equivalent to that. And I guess it was other people asking me, like, when did your name become a brand, or when did you make yourself a brand? And I guess I never saw myself as a brand, but when I think about it and like I take myself out of myself and I'm like, I function like a small business at this point in my career, and how I'm really big on my morals, and I'm really big, like I said, on remaining true and authentic. So I feel like when brands and companies, sorry, go ahead.
No. Let's talk about that, because it's something you touched on earlier as well. And I really want to sort of dig into it a little bit, is viewing yourself as a brand, Lunita, mm-hmm. you know, and trying mm-hmm. to balance that and seeing that you're representing yourself, your authentic self on your social media feed. Mm-hmm. The challenges of that, do you see it as two separate identities? Are you like talking to yourself in third person? Like how does that work? As part of your business as well, and yourself?
That's a really good question. I definitely have challenges. Like you say, talking to yourself in third person. Oh, it happens all the time. And if it's not myself, then I'm mm-hmm. like talking to my cat. Like I just need someone to be a soundboard and hear me out right now while I go back and forth. And I think the challenges that I face with that is, like I said earlier, I no shade to Kim Kardashian, but I'm not Kim Kardashian. I don't look at myself as an influencer. It is not my goal to wake up every day and think, how can I influence other people? Because then I feel like I am functioning personally and businessly. I'm functioning thinking about other people. And that's just like that whole, it just goes back to that saying, like, how's my cup ever going to be full or poured or stuff if I'm constantly pouring into other people? I think that how things should function, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I know this is also like my personal perspective, but I just feel like the more people work on themselves in the most selfish of ways, the more people work on themselves and better themselves and try to be better than you were the last 30 minutes. I can't tell you how difficult it is for me to shake if my morning starts off bad and to just allow it to ruin my whole day. And it takes discipline. It takes like emotional discipline. And trust in yourself to be like, you know what? I acknowledge that this section of my day was bad. I don't allow it to continue to ruin the rest of my day. And I feel like when you have that perspective of yourself, just naturally, the energy that you exude because you decided to make that decision is going to affect the people around you. I think it's literally going to be a domino effect. And that's how I want to move. And so when I do have those days when I wake up and it's going to be bad, there are times where I say, like with that battle, where do I want to update my followers that I'm having a bad day and have it be from the perspective of like, hey guys, I'm taking time out to let you know that like today sucks. It's been the Monday of all Mondays. I know I said I was going to do a live yesterday. I'm not going to do a live. Or do I make that personal boundary, that work life personal boundary, and go, I'm not even going to touch social media. And I will update them when I decide to update them, if I decide to come on the next day or the next 2 days. It does get stressful sometimes. And I feel like the only times I've really been stressed about that is during the pandemic, while everything has become so digitized. Like, I know we're opening up and stuff somewhere, but I still am someone very mindful and a bit staying inside. I'm a homebody, okay? like I really got to like you for you to invite me on me. I feel like I got to leave the house and expose myself and stuff. But it's moments where I feel like, oh my God, if I'm not posting, like the days where I try to take personal days, if I'm not posting, am I losing engagement? And then I have to be like,
right,
worrying about engagement. Because if people unfollow, then there are people that don't need to be aligned with you. And it's okay. Maybe their journey with you and following you is done. And then that's like, oh, but my follower count.
I want to touch on that. I want to touch on that tool that you talk about. That's really a higher level education and a processing ability to compartmentalize and be able to really identify yourself that this aspect of my life is not going so well today, but be able to push through that. It's really a high level processing tool in psychology. And it's something that is usually taught. So for you to intuitively have it speaks volumes to your strength and your ability to be resilient. No, it's true. Like it really speaks to how resilient you are as a person. And it's really key that you know that, because a lot of people, and especially people who are, you know, just getting into the social media game and just really kind of finding themselves, don't understand that differentiation and how you look at it as a small business and your ability to, you know, work irrespective of what's going on around you. And then also acknowledge when you need those personal days and when you need time off is really key to maintaining your best self.
Thank you, Dr. Lynn. Oh man. Wow.
Proud of you. Yeah.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. I love it. I love it. And that is something that I wanted to, again, follow up on that same point, because this is also a job, right? So being able to take those, I guess, personal days and personal time, and as you speak about self-care, tell us what that looks like, especially in a job where your life, at least parts of that you choose to share, right? Is on display with others. How do you protect one, the Lunita brand, but actually yourself? How do you do that?
Yeah. So I want to say that first and foremost, I think before I view my name and my page, my platform as a brand, I view it as a community. And that's one of the first things, like when a brand outreaches to me and it's a brand that I have already not had conversation with, when I introduce myself, my response email is like, this is how I'm laying out the plan, but this is just how I function. I look at my page as a community. So please have that respect when you come to me. Know that you're not just speaking to me, but essentially you're speaking to my community. That's the whole point of why we're here in email. Either you want to do some sort of collaboration, you want me to try out your project, you know, your product. I'm exposing it to my community. And I feel like a lot of brands receive that really well. There are some that are kind of turned off by that because they are doing like guerrilla marketing, you know, and they're just looking for quick traffic and footwork and exposure and eyes in their product and think that I can introduce that to, you know, my something thousand followers and that's okay. But I don't function like that. It's been since the pandemic where I've really had to rely on my platform and my community and my business, because essentially I will not be a business if it's not for the support of my community. If my community is not engaging with the product that I am naturally and organically displaying, or the platform that I'm naturally and organically talking about, then I am not a business. Does that make sense? Am I making sense? Okay. It was, you guys are probably about, I was like, okay.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I have to keep that at the forefront. And self-care, it's been, I think with everyone everywhere, it's been stress. Everyone everywhere is experiencing burnout. I have now had to really rely on my community to support my business for me to be where I'm at right now. I'd be lying if I said that last year and even in the beginning of this year, even recently, that I haven't relied on mutual aid to help keep a roof over my head. And it goes back to like you working on yourself and bettering yourself, you will naturally be able to help and better those people around you. And so I think it's important to remind people about self-care, not in the I'm a guru and that's all I'm talking about, because I low-key cringe at toxic positivity. And for those of you that don't know what toxic positivity is, when someone is always like, don't think about that, thoughts become things, everything's going to be great. I'm not going to shame the grand risers every day. But toxic positivity is a real thing. It is when someone is, it's almost like you refuse to see things as realistically and automatically shaming it as just negativity. There is a real thing to be too positive, where you just refuse to be grounded. You refuse to see the reality of like what's really present, I guess is the word I'm looking for. You refuse to be present, and it's just like constant. And it can be hurtful. Like if you have a friend that you want to reach out to, and you're having a really hard day, and they are so toxic positivity, like, girl, don't think that, or boy, don't think that, or boo, don't think that, because let me acknowledge non-binaries and they and them. You know, all that, they're not taking the time out to go, would you like me to validate your emotion right now? Would you like me to remind you that this is just currently happening with you, and that this is just a present moment in your journey? Do you want me to just sit with you in this feeling? You know what I'm saying? They're just constantly like, it's going to be better. It's going to be better. It's going to be better. Don't think like that. You know, I know that your hair looks really fucked up and she cut it all off, but it's going to grow back because it's just hair. And you there with a buzz cut. you there with a buzz cut and your hair is not going to grow back overnight. Little things like that. And it makes you feel invalidated. It makes your feelings and your current experience feel invalidated when someone is too positive. It becomes this, you know, they say moderation is key in everything. It applies to even yourself. It applies to your emotions. It applies to your balance on where you see things. So I never want to be toxic positive. I always want to come off very like, self-care isn't always face mask and a spa day. Sometimes self-care is tending to your inner child. People are so out of touch with their inner child. And granted, I am not a guru. I have no degrees.
Right.
I struggle with thinking high of myself in ways. But I feel like my journey in adulthood, having the journey that I do, because I lost my parents, so there's kind of been like no guidance. It's just kind of been like, I'm just winging it with the grace of the universe and God, you know, and my loved ones up there that are looking after me. It's been very much feeling like adulthood is just learning how to get back to your inner child. Maintaining yourself as an adult is taking care of that inner child of yours. The things that trigger us as an adult are things that probably disturbed us as an inner child that we did not take the time to really sit. And it's about unlearning those traumas and those things that make you tick or trigger. Because think about it, when you have an argument with someone, 9 times out of 10, the things that they're saying, your reaction is what you need to be reflecting on. Not what the other person said. Sure, you can check them later, but you need to check yourself and almost have like a mirror conversation with yourself and go, why did I react that way to that, and where did it come from? It takes unlearning. shadow work is what it's called, you know, in the energy and spiritual spectrum, you know, spectrum, and it's not easy. People think self-care is butterflies and, like I said, face masks and being comfortable. Sometimes it is crying in a corner and you're crying and you don't know why you're crying, but you're releasing. Sometimes it is watching your favorite movie when you were 10 years old and you're 47 years old and there's no shame in it. It's eating your favorite food. Right. It's cleaning your room because you haven't cleaned your room in forever.
So talk to us a little bit about that. As a healing healer, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about this self-care practices and helping to guide others. How does that process work? What does it look like to be a healing healer?
So when I refer to myself as a healing healer, I don't want to take the title of I am a healer because I'm not a healer of others. I am a healing healer because I am constantly ever healing, and I am a healing healer of myself. And I think that goes with on how I can help others. I think if I remain, again, my authentic and transparent self, if I remain vulnerable, if I show people in a place like social media where everything is filtered and hidden, I mean, even we can hide likes now, we can buy bots to write comments for us that aren't real. You know what I'm saying? We can change the way we physically look. We can bloop out things that we didn't say and auto-tune and stuff. There's so many distortions on social media that it makes me think about those people that don't have access to the real life or the real world, whether it's medical reasons, whether they live in the middle of Timbuktu, and all they have is social media. I need those people to know that there are still real and authentic people outside. I need them to know that there are real people that look just like them, that feel just like them, that sound just like them, that believe things just like them outside. It is so hard now when things are put in our face. People think that the feds are listening to us all the time when you are talking about Nike and we get off this call and all of a sudden Nike ads are popping up on my phone. Like, it's so hard to remain authentic in what's true and what's real. And I feel like that's the best way you can exchange energy with someone is by being your true self. Mm-hmm. You feel it in people's auras. You feel it when someone is speaking to you from their heart versus when someone is speaking to you like in a projection tone. You know, so I think just by doing that and implementing go ahead, sorry.
No. I was just saying it's the easiest option, right? The easiest option is to be yourself.
Not always the easiest. Trust me, not always the easiest. I wish it was the easiest because it causes you to what's that term where imposter syndrome. Where you see things so much and then imposter syndrome, no, it's very, it's not the easiest to remain authentic. I can't tell you how many times where I'll have a contract with the brand and I'm supposed to post or I'm supposed to do a takeover live. And I wake up and things just aren't how I expected. And I have to fake the funk. I can't fake the funk. I show everything on my face. And so that's when I have to be the bigger person and be vulnerable and contact and communicate with the brand and ask like, hey, I don't think that I can be present today. It's very, you know, and I guess that it's in those moments where I should applaud myself for being authentic, but then I beat myself up. Like, I let the brand down. I let the people down. You know, I possibly tainted the relationship with the brand because they think I'm not reliable.
Right.
But then that's where I have to be. Like, I have to remain authentic.
Tell me a little bit about how cannabis is incorporated in your healing sessions. How do you utilize cannabis? Is that just on your end? Is the person that you're working with for that particular session also incorporating cannabis? How functional and integral is that in your session?
So cannabis, I use cannabis all the time. When I was first introduced to cannabis, despite me knowing the healing benefits of cannabis, I was introduced in a recreational sense. Something I did with my friends. It wasn't until, honestly, I couldn't afford health insurance anymore. And when I can't afford health insurance, I can't afford the medications that I relied on. Like, well, I was on several pills that I relied on. And I am 18, 19, 20 years old, working 6 days a week. Granted, I had a great job, and the only reason I had a great job is because I knew the family, so I didn't start out getting paid minimum wage, and minimum wage in North Carolina to this day is $7.25 before taxes an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$7.25 before. If I'm a server, if I worked food and I was serving, I get paid $2.15 an hour.
It was even taxes. Less. Yeah. Yeah. Because of tips, right?
$2.15.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
To have my doctor's appointment at the blood and cancer clinic. My family has rare blood diseases, and they think that, you know, I could possibly have the same rare blood disease, and I'm having to pay for these blood tests out of pocket. And I'm 19 years old, and my $900 check, and the only reason it was $900 is because I banked out on commission, worked my ass off. $800 of it is going toward my doctor bill for these tests. Mm. And then it's just like, oh, we got these results. We need to do more tests. And I'm going,
right.
I'm still living at home, but I can't save up for the apartment that I want. How am I supposed to take care of my own gas? You know, go out with my friends later, things like that. So I said, you know what? Mm-hmm. I've got to find another way to heal
to medicate.
My ailments. Yes.
Yeah.
And because of the fact that I already grew up learning about holistic healing in ways, it caused me to dive in deeper with those ways and learn specifically how to aid my ailments in specific areas. Like, not just when I'm feeling sick, let me chop up some onions and put it on the bottom of my feet with socks on for 2 days, because people don't realize that
Right. Your
feet pull everything out. Your feet is will pull all those toxins out, and
your toxins, yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. It's from your feet, baby. Your feet control a lot of things. Your temperature. It's learning about the body. I have a stomach ache. I take lemongrass oil and I put it in my belly button. Things like that to help cramps. You know, it caused me to dive in deeper and not just learn. Caused me to dive in deeper and not just learn about. Overall, like, my body, but what other herbs on top of cannabis could I incorporate? So that's when I feel like I started not just using solely cannabis. Like, okay, I know I'm not going to have an appetite. This medication used to give me an appetite, so I'd be hungry by dinner time. I know I'm going to have to smoke to give me an appetite. You guys still hear me?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, sorry. AirPods are a little funny thing. But, that's when I started to do research and learn more about what herbs to mix and what way to consume. I started to be more mindful and intentional with my consumption. I started to expand not just consuming via inhalation, meaning by burning cannabis and inhaling, but topicals, tinctures, edibles, the way the body reacts, the fact that I would do like journaling and go, okay, if I use a topical, it's going to take me how long to feel, you know, my ache in that area, feel like a relief versus me smoking and feeling like immediately I don't feel anything, but then also being mindful, when does it wear off? I became more intentional, and I felt like becoming more intentional in my self-care practices is really what made me feel like I was actually fixing areas of my body. So I don't feel comfortable calling myself a healer, feeling that people can come to me like I can heal them, because I think that we are all our own self-healers. And I feel like if I just show people what I naturally do, and fine print, like, by all means, this isn't going to work for everyone, by all means, like, when I say I took 5 edibles and I felt like this, if you weigh 60 pounds and take 5 edibles, don't come after me saying that you didn't wake up for 7 days, because it's not like I said, let's have a consultation, because I don't have that degree. You know what I'm saying? I don't have that licensing. So it's always just going like, this is just my personal experience. I recommend this. I recommend this, you know, but use your own personal intelligence and do what you think is best for you.
Right.
What's up?
Yeah. Let's speak to that a little bit about sort of, you know, you're sharing what you do, right? You're sharing a part of your life. How does that work in these different platforms, the IG, et cetera, with cannabis now? Is there certain things that you got to be careful of, especially dealing with other brands and just the advertising of cannabis? So how does cannabis, that work? What are the challenges there?
That's a really good question, because there are actually, there are definitely challenges. Like, when I started out, I think my only challenge is I wasn't even thinking so much about social media. I was thinking more so, how are my parents going to find out, my family, my church members? They already judged me because I got tattoos, you know, things like that. I was worrying about how is the outside going to look if they saw my cannabis usage online. And now with rules and regulations and laws and the same, you know, couple people own majority of all these platforms. It wasn't until I moved to Florida, and it wasn't until I want to say after I got my medical marijuana here in Florida is when my content started to be flagged, or and I would have to do like appeals. And I feel like it was because my name was becoming more common in the medical marijuana space in Florida. It is a very tight-knit space here in Florida. Not that big of what you see on social media is not that big of a diverse space, but it is a very diverse space for those of us that know. And I would get my, I would post something from Move, and it would have, you know, I'm very mindful. I don't show the percentages because I know people can report that. You know, I don't show my label. No one should show their label. I panic. I internally panic when I see people show their containers, because in the state of Florida, for those of you watching that don't know, it is literally equivalent to as if you're going and picking up your prescription of Adderall. Everything comes with your recommendation on it. It has your name, your date of birth. It has your doctor's name. It has your patient medical ID. All someone needs is that they could, and with hackers, that's the last thing you want. And it has to have a sticker. You cannot leave a dispensary with any product that does not have that recommendation on it by law. People are just so excited to show the gas that they got from the dispensary and just post it on social media with all the information. I'm like, you just posted your address. That's equivalent to posting your address. You know, you to just kind of be actually a little bit worse. More mindful. Honestly, yeah, really, actually worse. Scary. It could get scary. It caused you to just kind of be a little bit more mindful how you post. I would have my stuff flagged, like in stories, for sale of drugs, and I would have to appeal. Mm. I'd have to appeal and show this dispensary is tagged. I am a Florida medical marijuana patient. Like, sometimes they would even require, like, asking for ID, like, because, you know, Instagram goes through Facebook. So ultimately, it's people through Facebook that are doing these appeals and looking at the things. And they'd always be turned over, but it was a story, and they only last for 24 hours. So it's not like the story would repost. It'd just be like, your account is in the good for now.
Did you ever get shut down for posting?
Knock on wood, let's not ever have that happen. What's been happening, though, is a lot of people in the cannabis space have been having their accounts shut down. And the way that social media is very fast-paced now, all it takes is having 20 people hate you enough to report your stuff for something that has nothing to do. I did a giveaway with a product. They make really dope grinders and pipes company. Did a giveaway to them. My picture was a flat lay, and it had the product, and then it had some flour, as if I haven't had flour on my page before. And the giveaway was taken down. It was reported for explicit content, nudity, graphic violence. It had nothing to say sale, distribution of drugs, illegal sale, nothing. That is the first time I've ever had something flagged on my account where Instagram, I was unable to appeal it. Like, when you had exited that, you know, your post has been taken down because you, didn't follow community guidelines. When I exited that, there was a second warning, and this has never happened to me before. And that warning was like, pretty much keep it up and you could lose your page. And I'm letting you know, if you lose your page, you'll lose your DMs, you'll lose this, you lose this. So I wrote the brand immediately. I had a whole breakdown, like not displaying it to the brand, but I had a whole breakdown because my Instagram page is not my business. That is my personal platform and that is my community. My Instagram page, I have curated for over a decade. My Instagram page where they show me time hops of my parents that are no longer with me, of my friends that I have lost recently in the last year that are no longer with me, and I get to see memories of me, I no longer have access to that. My Instagram page where 9 times out of 10, my captions are my poetry pieces, and I'll no longer have access to that. How do you back up your Instagram page? So the brand immediately was like, we are happy with the results. We have gained all these followers for it being posted just for 28 hours. Like, please. And this is a brand that we had to get on a phone call because dialect differences and background differences. And they are a brand based in America. So they would say certain things that would kind of have me like, they felt comfortable enough to send that to me in email. And it took us getting on a phone call to be like, hey, so we're actually really young. We're like 18 and 19. We, you know, our parents funded this. We're just starting out. You are totally right. But we just wanted to get on the phone with you because we have not paid someone the amount that you're paying. And not to say that we can't pay that, but it was almost like they wanted to see where their money was going to go. So I was coming from this giveaway is not running the full duration that it's supposed to run. I felt like they were going to feel like they weren't getting their money's worth. And they were like, we've gained 500 followers. We have gotten great engagement. We care about your page. Go ahead and archive that post. Take it down. You are good. And we'd love to work with you again. And I was like, okay, great. So that, it had me stressed because of the fact that it was flagged for so many things that had nothing to do with it, made me feel like if I post a picture of my cat, is someone going to say sexually explicit content? And then my page is down. And.
Well, these companies are all private entities. They can, they make their own rules.
And then, you know, it's
and change them anytime they want.
Exactly. And because I don't just work in cannabis, I'm a mental health and self-health advocate. I am a advocate for the LGBTQ, for brown communities, for black communities. There's a lot of stuff that popped off last year and a lot of things that I stood up for. A lot of the stress and, you know, morals and everyone losing jobs last year, and all of a sudden cannabis was deemed an essential business in the middle of a global pandemic. And dispensaries here in Florida, dispensaries that I have attempted to pitch myself to that wouldn't give me the time of day, or all of a sudden in my inbox asking me, can I help them post and tell people that their shelves are stocked? And I'm going, now why all of a sudden are you in my inbox? Is it because you need someone that looks like people right now? And I know that. I know that I am a token hire. I know that I am a token hire because I know that instead of having to find someone individually for the black community, individually for the brown community, individually for the queer community, so on and so forth, I'm a token hire. And I can't work with companies. I refuse to work with companies, despite the fact that my rent is late, despite the fact that my fridge does not have food. I refuse to work with companies that cannot acknowledge that cannabis was founded off of the backs of black and brown and indigenous people. And if you can't acknowledge that there are people like us that are locked up right now, where people that don't look like us can happily, no knowledge of cannabis, but just happily just have the money and be able to start it. You know how much black farmers in cannabis in Florida are struggling just to get a license? It's stuff like that that right, I can't. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to sit here and talk about your shelves are stocked and you guys are coming out with new products. And last year was the year that Florida, we got introduced to edibles. Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like it was 2020, not 2019. Yep. Yeah. And every dispensary was like, come. And I'm over here going, wait, reaching out to me to get people to come. What are you taking? What protocols are you taking to ensure people are safe right now during COVID? You guys are all of a sudden implementing senior citizen discounts. What are you doing for the senior citizens, knowing that COVID is really going after them right now? How are you protecting your stores? How are you protecting your staff members? How are you distributing? These are the questions. And this is when 9 times out of 10, when I send these emails back, the responses that I get, I am no longer communicating to that person. But I can't tell you how many dispensaries in Florida, their legal team has communicated back to me.
Wow.
Right.
Let that sit in. They're legal team. And I'm like, it had to go to legal. You know, legal comes in not like they're your
sometimes
friend. Legal comes in as a threat. Legal comes in like, you know, they're supposed to scare you. Like, shut up. Stop talking what you're talking. Mm-hmm. And it's happened to me last year. It happened to me this year. It happened to me recently. And
right.
I'm sorry. I signed no contract. You're not going to shut me up. This is these are the things and these are the morals that I stand on. These are the things that are important. Right. Your company is so uncomfortable that you can't make a post about what's going on with the Black Lives right now. And then you see the companies that try to. Not even Black Lives. You won't say nothing about Black Lives, but everyone knows after the Black Lives Matter movement was Pride. So you want to hire me for a Pride campaign. We will happily put the rainbow logo on your brand for 30 days. But you won't talk about where Pride started from. We're rioting everything was going on
in the history.
That's all everything was talking about. Let's give history. Let's give history. And it's all cannabis history, but it's also incorporating community. Let's teach people. Let's have a learning experience. Let's show people where Pride came from. Pride was a riot, a 7-day riot between Black and brown, queer, trans people and the police. Let's talk about it. And it's been very hard, not in the sense of like for me not to stay true, but it's just been very hard feeling like I'm like the only, like I'm alone. I don't really have that big of community where people are like-minded in a place of Florida where it feels like it is very profit over patience. And then you have to find gems like yourself, Dr. Lynn, and yourself, Juma, and know that there are people fighting where it is not profit over patience, and it'll always be patient over profit. Always.
Always. 100%.
And that's just, I think you hit it on the nail. When you talk about building community and your page serving as your community and building community, speaking with us, I think that's part of it, right? You need a strong community if you're going to stick to some moral ground and stick
challenging
to,
things.
You know, your beliefs, right? Yeah, for sure. So what's next for Lunita? What can we expect? What's coming down the road?
What's coming down the road? The year's about to end, which is absolutely crazy. But I am actually coming out with a close brand and friend of mine. She is a Black-owned, woman-owned shop. And she makes these adorable chillstone pieces. And we are doing the first launch where she's ever worked with a creator and pretty much do pieces, like a time capsule piece on behalf of the creator. And this isn't what I'm launching, but they look like this. And they're called chillstone. So the whole aspect of this is to prevent germs. This was pre-COVID, you know, if you're at a party and someone passed you something and you don't want to hit it, so you just... It's a glass piece, which makes it essentially cleaner, even if you're using tobacco, because, you know, tobacco will hit here first before hitting you. But we came out with an entire collection that is dedicated to my mom and my parents and my family, and it's called the Secret Garden Collection. It's coming out during Black Friday. So... yeah, chillstones, people will be able to order their own, and they're going to have cute little insects and florals and plants on them so people can feel like they can incorporate that into their self-care routines and their moments of zen where they just want to relax. And because unless you're smoking a sativa to get you hyped for like a pre-workout, cannabis consumption should be all about, you know, mindfulness and relaxation and stuff and just having a good time. And yeah.
So the Secret Garden Collection and the brand is Chillstone. Repeat that brand again.
The brand is actually JTT Accessories. That's the Instagram handle, at JTT Accessories. Okay. But the pieces are called Chillstone pieces.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. And you know, this season, we're all focused on free the culture. So before we get out of here, please let us know, what does that mean to you, free the culture?
Free the culture means uplifting community. Free the culture means every man and woman and person and being as their own. Free the culture means we all have the same amount of opportunities. It is equality. It is inclusivity. It is everyone at the table. Enough seats for everyone at the table. That is what free the culture means to me. When I'm someone, I don't look at myself as a ladder climber. if I'm ever on an elevator, you best believe that there are people on that elevator with me and that I'm sending that elevator back down for more people.
That's what's
yeah.
up. All right.
We
All
love
right.
that.
Appreciate
we love that.
That. Doc, any last words?
Of course. Learned so much in this interview, so much that I've already known you, but now to know personally more about you. And I just have so many notes, just understanding Lunita as not an influencer, but more of a small business, and understanding the importance of that and being selfish with your time and improving yourself and making that the priority. The sense of community, how passionate you are about uplifting your community and educating and pouring into your community. And you know I'm going to steal this phrase, toxic positivity, because I absolutely love that.
Course,
love,
of
love,
course.
Love that.
I can't wait to see
I it. Never heard that, and I love it because it is so true
yeah,
to
one.
So many people. Please
yeah.
coin that. Like, that's
yes,
perfect.
It's toxic. Well,
you know?
I can't because I've heard other people say it, but when I heard it, I was like, that's true. Toxic
yes.
positivity. Like, people that are just optimistic all the time. Like, you ever see someone and they,
yes.
you know, you're not a morning person, and someone's just all uppity, and you're like, she's telling me good morning. She wants to ask how my day is, what I did this weekend. Can you just tone it down some? But this has been great. I love this. I would love to do this more. I thank you guys
absolutely.
So much.
We love you.
I feel just as ecstatic as, I mean, Juma, you don't know this, but when Dr. Lynn and I did a panel a few months ago with Canoclusive, I was nervous, okay? I was like palm sweating, nervous. I literally was trying to think, how can I talk myself out of this? I was comparing myself. I said, I'm about to be up there with Miss Mary Pryor, okay? And Esquire, okay? Dr. Lynn, I said, what do they want me? I don't got no college education. Why am I supposed to be up there? And I was like, with these powerful Black women, like these Black women that I admire and look up to, and they want me? Is this a mistake? They
absolutely.
Must not be able to find someone else. Like, I'm literally thinking the worst. And they made me feel so welcomed and, like, reminded me that I'm here for a reason, and that
right.
as important as I look at them, I am just as important. And if I'm just as
valued.
Important, that means other people are just as important. And it's
yeah.
very, like it's, not to say that I need affirmations, but we all do every now and then. It was very important. So thank you
we do.
For displaying that you not only say that you free the culture, but actually living by the culture, by actually passing the microphone, by actually inviting someone mm-hmm. to the table. Thank you for this opportunity, both of you.
Of
and
course. I mean, of course, honestly, I've heard you say at least 3 times in this interview, not having formal education. I never want you to undervalue your life experience. I never want you to undercut the importance of exposure and how you've taken your accounts and your interactions and have internalized them in order to produce good from them. All of those things are more valuable than a paper degree, more valuable than any schooling or formal education. And I really want you to like keep that with you, because people pay for what you do. People pay to try to learn how to be cool. People pay to try to learn how to be an influencer and be all of those things. And sometimes you just can't teach, you know, beauty. You can't teach energy. You can't teach spirituality. Those are things that you hone and things that you possess. And those are key. So I'd never want you to feel like because you don't have that college education or because you don't have that specific license or training, that it is any less important or any less necessary or, you know, any less, you know, valued in the space that you operate in and what you pour into people. I love you personally. I think you're super dope. You know, we've been Insta family for years. So I just really enjoy spending time to get to know you on a different level.
I'm going to call you after this and cry. Not to say that I don't want to feel like my tears. Not to have you feel like you're dying.
I know, right?
Not to feel like
no,
I don't
I'm going
to
cry
you know,
too.
FaceTime, look, because you know, FaceTime, you can now do 4 people. So it could be a whole little FaceTime. But I want you to know that, like, wow. Like, if I wasn't feeling low and having a tough time, and like you already haven't been pouring love into me, just like, wow. Thank you both for seeing me and hearing me.
Thank you for joining us. And I think that's how you build community. So at that,
yes.
This is Leaf Style, no longer a subculture, a Leaf Style. Yay, I appreciate
Yay.
You guys. Thank you, Lunita.
Thank you.